So we're sticking with entomopathogenic nematodes, but now we're going to Florida citrus groves where we're trying to control the Diaprepes root weevil. We've been using augmentation historically, but now we're taking a closer look at conservation biological control. So that's the story I'll be giving you today. If you're not familiar with the Diaprepes root weevil, it's a fairly large, colorful weevil, native to the Caribbean, was first detected in Florida in 1964. It's highly polyphagous, gets into a lot of different kinds of plants, especially citrus, but other crops, ornamentals, and weedy plants. The larvae that feed on the roots do most of the serious damage. They can girdle major structural roots and facilitate infection by various plant pathogens, especially Phytophthora. So we often talk about the Phytophthora diaprepes complex in Florida citrus. So it's a major citrus pest, can kill trees and destroy groves. And the estimate of annual losses in Florida is about $75 to $100 million. It spread very easily on ornamentals, gets into a lot of different ornamentals in Florida. Florida ships out a lot of ornamentals, nursery stock, in trucks and aircraft. And in that way, it was transmitted to the Mall of America at one point, found in their ornamentals, had to be wiped out there. Got into a botanical garden in Britain. That was kind of interesting. Recently introduced into Texas, southern Texas, a citrus area, and in California, another citrus area, where it's considered a major threat to agriculture, subject to quarantine eradication programs in both of these states at the moment. So Diaprepes is a serious pest, getting into a lot of different places, moving around. You'll hear a few other talks about it at the conference this week. And so we're still having problems with it in Florida as well. The life history, the adults spend a lot of time in the canopy, feeding on foliage and citrus, especially it's the young flush that they really like. They mate in the canopy and lay their egg masses in the canopy. The eggs can be laid in masses that can number about 350 eggs or less. When the female lays the egg, she actually seals the leaves together, two leaves together around that egg mass, so that protects them against various kinds of predators. But certain egg parasitoids can still get in and find them and parasitize them. When the larvae hatch, they're about a millimeter in length, and they drop down to the soil where they burrow in and start feeding on fine fibrous roots. As they get larger, they move into the larger roots, into the crown of the tree, and that's where they can really, really damage the tree. Pupation occurs in the soil, and about a year later, they'll emerge from the soil as adults, but sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. The life history can be quite variable. So what makes Diaprepes difficult to control? Well, last count, there were 270 known crop, ornamental, and weedy plants that could be used as hosts either for adult feeding, egg laying, or larval development, so they can get into a lot of different things. An asynchronous, complex, variable life history, highly dependent on soil temperature and moisture, so it's really tough to predict when they'll get peaks in the population. In central Florida, they can emerge almost any time during the year. High fecundity, protected egg masses. Many pesticides are really ineffective against soil-dwelling larvae, especially there's special restrictions in places like Florida with high water tables and so on, so that can be an issue. And many natural enemies have very limited patchy distributions, and this applies to sort of natural populations of entomopathogenic nematodes. Lots of different control strategies are being researched and used currently in Florida and other places. Biological control, cultural control, chemical control. Entomopathogenic nematodes are probably the best weapon we have against larvae in the soil. Historically, we've been using augmentation. Now we're looking more at conservation, and you'll see what that's all about as we go along. Focusing first on augmentation, various Steiner nematodes and heterobditids have been tested for control of root weevils and other citrus insects in Florida over the years. Commercial nematode products have been used by Florida citrus growers to grow root weevils for over 15 years, so we have quite a history there. It's estimated that about 19,000 hectares of Florida citrus are treated annually with Steiner Nemo Real Brave, one of the best nematodes we've found for this at the moment, and Becker Underwood's product BioVector is one we use quite frequently in Florida. Nematode augmentation, well, here's Larry Duncan preparing a batch of BioVector on the tailgate of our truck, mixing it all up. You saw some of this with Joel's talk as well. Here we're adding it to a spray tank, and then we're essentially mixing it up and injecting it into the irrigation system. So here it's another chemigation system as well. So we're spraying it out under the trees using these microjet sprinklers under the trees through the irrigation system. So somewhat similar to what you saw with Joel's talk. In terms of monitoring the success of augmentations, we use these cage sentinel weevil larvae. We bury these in the soil, usually drilling a hole and burying them about 20 to 30 centimeters down. And so that's how we monitor a lot of our augmentation. We also monitor adult emergence in these cone traps, and we sort of monitor the adult population using what's called Tedder's traps, the black trap you see in this picture. We also monitor neonates dropping out of the canopy onto the soil using these funnel traps, or essentially a pitfall trap. And then we look at various characteristics of the trees in long-term studies, especially yield. An EPN augmentation in citrus using these techniques seems to work fairly well. This is a four-year study that Larry did, adding Rio Brave at the label rate twice per year for a four-year period. Here we're targeting two weevils, Diprepes abbreviatus, as well as Pachnias lytus, the blue-green weevil, both of which are problems in Florida, reducing the weevil population maybe by about 50%. And in the same study, we were looking at yield of these trees over the 4 years, and p-value isn't quite as good as we'd like, but for a field study of this kind, it looks pretty good. It looks like we're actually getting better yield in our treatments and everything, and this is very encouraging to the growers that it looks like they're getting a good return on their investment, so everything's working out here fairly well. The nematode producers are making a profit in the business, and the growers are getting a return on their investment, so this is really what we consider a biological control success story. And now we'd like to make it even better. Even though it has been very successful in terms of augmentation, there are problems, there are places where it doesn't seem to work very well. And we're sort of focusing on variation in soils in Florida. We have, to simplify things a bit, we have two different kinds of soil in Florida. We have the central ridge soils and the flatwood soils. The central ridge is the area we see in red and green. And there we have very coarse, sandy soils. They're very well drained with little organic matter. And then we have what we call the flatwood soils in the yellow and orange areas you see on the map. They're very shallow, fine textured soils, tend to be poorly drained. And if you look at the pictures of sort of the sand grains in these soils, you see the texture of the soils is really very different. A very coarse soil versus a very fine textured soil. And if we compare the success of augmentation in some of these coarse sandy soils versus the sandy clay loam soils, the fine textured soils, we have really good success on the coarse sands on the ridge. But in a lot of different places with these fine textured soils, really the nematode applications often don't seem to work very well. Okay, so there are places where the augmentation is working well and places where it's not, and soil texture seems to be a major constraining factor there. And if we look at the endemic EPNs in the state, they're much more abundant in the central ridge area, in the coarse sandy soils, and they're not so abundant in the flatwood soils. And if you look at the distribution of the weevils are much more abundant in the fine flatwoods soils than in the coarse ridge soils. So we have good endemic populations of nematodes in one area that seem to have a lot of natural ability to suppress the weevils. And in the other area where the EPNs aren't so abundant, the weevil populations tend to be much higher and tend to cause problems in the citrus groves. So just to review a little bit, EPN applications are effective for root weevil control in central Florida citrus groves, but there's evidence of a major habitat constraint in terms of the soils. Are improvements possible? Well, we're working on that. But what I want to concentrate on for the next few minutes is conservation biocontrol. The endemic EPNs cause a high level of natural weevil mortality in certain Florida citrus groves, but again, there's a major habitat constraint in terms of soil type. So we're trying to identify the key limiting factors to the populations, the endemic populations of EPNs, and we're looking at various habitat manipulations that might actually enhance these populations. In terms of biotic limiting factors for conservation biocontrol, there are nematophagous fungi that we think are really important trappers and endoparasites. There are free-living bacteriurus nematodes that actually compete with the nematodes for the cadavers that they kill, so that can restrict their reproductive ability. There are Penicillin species that tend to attach to the nematodes, and though they don't kill them, they tend to encumber them somewhat and restrict their ability to move through the soil and infect. And there are various microarthropods that function as predators on the nematodes. So we're looking much more closely at soil food webs now, getting into the ecology, the soil ecology involved in this system. They're very physical limiting factors as well, soil moisture, soil texture, and porosity. And here especially, we're very interested in habitat manipulation, and this might also be able to influence the biotic limiting factors as well. So in this respect, Larry got into what he calls his food web project, where the main goal is to identify key components of the soil food web associated with Diprepes and EPNs. This particular experiment, he either added or didn't add Steinernema Rio Brave, and either added or didn't add composted animal manure mulch. Study lasted for about 2 years with multiple applications over time, and then for a year following, there were other sort of measures of what's going on as a result of these applications. So 2 year period for the study with measurements over time in various ways. I can't talk about all the things that he did in this study, but I want to focus on a couple of things. The composted animal manure mulches suppressed trapping fungi and had variable effects on endoparasitic fungi. The red arrows that you see here indicate when the applications were made, and you can see that the fungi, there was an impact on the fungi here. So we think that That's important. The composted animal manure mulch has increased the prevalence of endemic EPNs. Yep. So we seem to have a very positive influence on the nematodes here by suppressing the fungi with this kind of mulch application. So this is one way we may be able to manipulate the habitat to enhance the nematode populations. So during the 12 months after the final EPN treatment in the study, there were fewer adult Diaprepes abbreviatus trapped in plots augmented with Rio Brave and or mulched with animal manure. Something else that the growers are actually doing in these flatwoods groves, these groves with fine textured soil, is that when they plant new trees, they're actually digging a hole about 3 feet in diameter, filling it with coarse sand from the ridge. They do this to improve drainage and help those young trees grow. And we think that maybe this is actually going to create a little habitat around those trees, which might actually be very amenable to the EPNs. So we've come along and inoculated those little islands of coarse sand with various species of nematodes, either Steinernema diaprepesi, Steinernema rio brave, Heterobditis indica, or Zelandica, and then we're monitoring their persistence. So far, things are looking pretty good. We're getting levels of mortality with our sentinel weevil larvae at levels that are very comparable to what we see on the ridge, much higher than in the surrounding fine-textured grove. This study is continuing, and we're continuing to monitor, but we're thinking that just maybe these islands are going to really help us in terms of managing this weevil. We're doing more studies with soil manipulation. The plots you see here are about 6 feet in diameter and about a foot deep, and then we're planting young trees into this, and we'll be inoculating those as well and seeing if we can actually create nice little environments for the nematodes to protect those trees. So conclusions, the use of EPN augmentation for control of root weevils in Florida citrus groves is, we think, a biological control success story, but the effectiveness varies among sites and soils. Further research is needed to assess the influence of biotic and abiotic factors in EPN performance and persistence, to optimize control strategies for the full range of conditions that exist in Florida citrus groves, and determine the potential for conservation biological control through habitat manipulation. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
We don't have any time for questions at this point, but we have to move on to the next speaker. The title of the next talk is Parasitism of Subterranean Termites by Entomopathogenic Nematodes by Hao Yu.